Welcome to The Roofer Show with your host, Dave Sullivan. You found the podcast that helps roofing contractors grow their businesses, make more money, and have more free time. Each week, Dave interviews the industry's top experts who will give you actionable tips and strategies for the real world of construction to help you take your roofing business to the next level. So let's get down to business.
Hey, everybody, what's up? Welcome to the Roofer Coach Podcast, the place to be if you want to grow a more profitable roofing business. I am your host, Dave Sullivan, the Roofer Coach, and standing next to me is John Delorier from Delorier Roofing, Savannah, Georgia. What's happening, John?
I'm not exactly standing next to you. I am sitting next to you on the screen on the other side of the country. But yes, I'm with you, Dave. I'm with you.
What a buzzkill, man. We're trying to make this like a professional operation. However, so John, you look a little green. What's going on?
I've been cleaning up a bunch of kids' throw up. That's what I do the day after Father's Day.
That's right. Happy Father's Day, man. Well, we just got off our interview with Dan Antonelli. Yeah, Dan is a branding expert, has a book, Branded Not Blanded. And that was a great interview that we're going to get into because this is one area that roofing contractors, let's say, are not the best when it comes to branding, truck wrapping, colors, so forth. What do you think, John?
I told him on the recording that I felt personally attacked because he pretty much just named my business as the worst possible branding. A family name, a name as something you can't say or spell, and something boring with traditional, like I have navy blue and white and black as my colors. That's just, he pretty much personally attacked me on that. And so I did feel attacked, and I felt very, very motivated to change what my brand is. We've done really well this year, but I definitely got a lot out of what he said. I think that if you are interested, no matter what level you are in size and revenue, he made some really, really strong points. To the biggest point that I thought he made was increase your branding. And he defined what that is, what your brand is. Increase your branding, not spend, but thought process, and then make sure that message is very clear so that you can reduce the consistent bags of money that we spend on marketing, so that you're sub 5% on everything you're doing with marketing, so that you're actually getting return on investment on a very, very solid brand that gets customers to actually know how to find you in an easier way. So, I mean, I think you're going to hear a lot of points that he makes, but I thought that was wildly valuable for me and for any other roofing contractors as well.
Well, I think it's the same as why roofing contractors don't invest in SEO and then rather go with PPC or something that's that immediate gratification or getting business, but it's one shot deal. You're not building a more valuable business, let's say, by doing that, where people get to know you in the name, in the area that you're working in. We're not all that good in investing in our business. And that's really what it is over long term, because it's hard to put a number on the exact return. But you look at companies that have done a good job in branding, you know who they are. You're going to find them. And they're going to, oh yeah, I know those guys, which means you're going to be able to charge a higher price for your work, which is what it's all about, the differentiation. And yeah, I thought that was good stuff, but he did use you as an example of absolutely what not to do, I think.
Pretty much. Without saying my name and looking at me in the eye, he did. Correct.
I like yours. I think it's great. I got no problem with it. You know, it works for you. So speaking of that, what's happening? How's business going? What's new in your market?
We're busy. Free shout out to roofing.com, Hunter Ballou, and all the people at RoofCon, all those people. We're an exclusive partner at roofing.com. So if any homeowners on like in the Athens area or Savannah area, and they are on roofing.com and they're searching for roofing, we get the lead exclusively. And so today alone, we got 3 leads just for that. 2 for Athens, 1 for Savannah. And then we've gotten at least 6 or 8 others last week. We just started with them. So super excited about that. Definitely having storms, definitely a lot of rain. Just June is always busy. So that's that for the Southeast. June is definitely the busiest month. Then people will get up to 4th of July and it'll stop for a week, and then we'll go back to working hard. So a lot of work, a lot of ProLine work. ProLine's going to release in about a month for the CRM, full CRM. We're doing masterminds. So masterminds are really good. We're growing that as well. I think we found our sweet spot with 8 total contractors per group. That's like the perfect number. So everyone gets a lot of value. I'm really enjoying that, going through that group with you, and then looking to grow more groups with an 8 contractor cap on those. So yeah, busy. I'm busy. I'm tired. I was up last night again.
One last thing, John, you mentioned ProLine, and I'm going to give you a shout out, you know, because this thing really kicks ass. I got to say, more people should be using this. All right. You know, one of the biggest problems that when we come into working with these contractors, I'm like, okay, well, what's your follow-up with these open quotes? And generally, it is nothing. And that's where the gold is. And that's what I like about this program. I'm just going to, you know, you didn't even tell me to say this, but I think it's pretty impressive. And those that have implemented, which basically everybody in our groups and coaching has, because they see the benefit. But when you do that and you're automating that process, you're getting some great sales. I mean, you know, it's converting those sales. And we talk about this all the time, John, you do, where, you know, you could have these quotes from a year ago, 2 years ago, and they're still getting contacted. You're top of mind. They've forgotten about everybody else. And now they're calling you, don't you? And give us a quick, there you go. There's a quick plug. How do they get that?
I appreciate it, Dave. So we're really excited at ProLine. AJ and I have been working on this for years now. And so, you know, for 4 years, it has been an automation tool, a phone platform for your business. Now it's going to be a CRM. By the time this airs, probably in another couple weeks. So I've been using it as a CRM for almost 2 years now, but we've added projects, calendars, everything you would want. And we're not increasing our pricing. So we're going to keep the same pricing. You're going to have all the automation tools that you already get with ProLine. Even this morning, a customer, a homeowner of a really, really high-end home in downtown Savannah, multi-million-dollar building, really complimented me, but it was really ProLine that was the one that actually, not just the follow-up after the proposal, but the communication that he received because of our automations. He understood exactly what we're doing all the time, from, you know, first reaching out to us on our website, all the automated texts and emails that he got. He understood who we were. It's really, you know, we love helping other contractors, but I'm selfishly love it for myself, because I always get like complimented because of what ProLine does for my business. So yeah, that's what we do. Use ProLine.com. We'll be a CRM definitely by August 1st, maybe by the middle of July.
Yeah, and if they use, we get some promo code that they get some.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff. We'll announce all that, as far as like you'll get. I'm pretty sure we're going to be having half off of our first 100 contractors that sign up. And that we're going to give half off of white glove onboarding as well. So we've already had a couple of contractors take advantage of that. So we're just totally setting them up. Think of Adam Sand, but a lot more affordable, because it's very focused. We don't have to do a complete system, because now ProLine is a complete system in itself. So there's going to be all kinds of promos until August 1st.
All right. Well, I hadn't planned on that plug, but this one I have. Let's hear what John has to say about Ruby.
Support for the Roofer Coach podcast comes from Ruby. the number one customer communication solution for growing roofing businesses. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Ruby creates exceptional experiences for your callers and website visitors. They take messages, screen and transfer callers, schedule appointments, perform new customer intake, confirm details with outbound calls, and much more. Just like an in-house receptionist, only better, because they turn every ring into a relationship. It all adds up to more opportunities and more time saved. For more information, visit get.ruby.com/theroofercoach for up to $150 off your first month. Imagine you powered by Ruby.
Okay, well, those guys are great. Love them. But let's get into our interview with Dan Antonelli. Dan, what's going on? Great to have you on the show. Appreciate you coming.
Hey, what's up, Dave? What's going on, brother?
It's all good. We've got John Delorier, Roofing from Savannah with us. And we're going to get into a conversation about branding. I got a lot of questions. It's not something that the roofing industry does very well. I don't know if you feel the same way, but we'll get into it. And I want to talk about your book. And that is Branded, Not Blanded, and Kickcharge Your Home Service Business. And Dan, you've got a company that does branding. You guys are known as the premier branding business, Kickcharge Creative. So let's get into it. Let's just jump in. And how did you get into the business? And you obviously saw a real problem in the home service industry. So that thing just took off. What's your story?
Sure. Well, I actually started out working with contractors when I was probably 15 years old, and I actually came from a sign painting background. So I was doing lettering on trucks when I was, you know, 15, 16 years old in my parents' backyard. And then I got a job in a sign shop, worked there, working with other home service companies, doing primarily truck lettering. Wanted to be a sign painter. My parents thought it might be better for me to actually go to college. So I did. And then I studied advertising while I was at college, graduated and worked as a designer for many years, and then was still doing the signs and lettering and things like that, mainly truck lettering. And I always thought from the very beginning that how fundamental that logo was. And if you can get that logo done properly, then all the other things will function better. So very early on, I was doing the logo design, and then I was doing their trucks. I was doing their business cards, uniforms, stationery, brochures, websites, and everything really drove in terms of the aesthetics from that original logo. So I always thought it would be really cool if a small business had this single source to go to, and then everything would really match and be basically on brand. And so I basically worked out of my house for many years. And then in 2007, I got an office with employees. And, you know, I even had employees working out of my basement for the first couple of years, which is kind of funny. But now we're in an office that I built, a new building about 5 years ago. It's a nice 5,000 square foot office. And we have, I think at this point, we have 23 people on staff. So we'll do this year probably a little over 200 home service brands that we'll create. I'd say over the course of the last 15 or 20 years, we probably have probably in excess of 2,000 home service brands that we've created. So, you know, obviously with that comes a lot of experience, a lot of assessment of results. I think one of the things I'm really big about is you know, while I like to make pretty brands and pretty logos and put them on trucks and stuff, ultimately at the end of the day, all I care about is really what are the results of that, you know? So we're very big on really assessing growth, revenue increases, marketing spends as it relates to some of the efforts post rebrand. And I think that's the thing that I talk a lot about in the book, certainly, is the idea, again, that the better the brand, the least amount of money you'll need to spend the month on marketing, right? So you'll see a lot of people, you know, listen, anyone can spend their way out of a poor brand, but why would you want to, you know? So a lot of our clients are living in the less than 5% as far as percentage of revenue on ad spend. and yet they're growing at a very, very substantial pace. Well, how is that possible? Like, why do you hear the sort of the conventional wisdom that you got to spend 10% to grow? And I'm like, well, that's bullshit. Like, a lot of my clients are spending 5% or less, and they're crushing it. You know, just again, that, you know, that old idea is the weaker the brand, the more money you'll spend marketing it. And that's just sort of the bottom line.
Let me take a minute and thank our sponsors. First, we've got Peak Leads, peakleads.io. If you're a commercial contractor or thinking about getting into the commercial space, you want to talk to Peak Leads because they will get you leads. They'll get you leads and get you on the roofs of those buildings where you can deal directly with the owner, the decision maker. You're not always talking to the janitor, but be the modern day contractor. They help you leverage technology to generate, organize, and maximize commercial roofing leads. You can find out more about Peak Leads at peakleads.io. Tell them Dave sent you. But you can have all the leads in the world, but if you can't close them, it doesn't mean a thing. So you need to learn how to sell with confidence. And that's what the Sales Transformation Group will do for you. They will give you a great sales process that you can pass on to your salespeople. You'll become a better leader. You can build a winning sales team. So go check them out at salestransformationgroup.com/roofershow. They've got a number of programs, and I'm sure there's something there for you. So go check them out. salestransformationgroup.com/roofershow. What are some of the problems you see specifically in the roofing industry? Because we tend to be a little behind the curve, I would say, as opposed to HVAC companies, plumbing, mm-hmm. Where they seem to be more aware, more focused on building their brand.
I would even say on top of that question, what are the problems you see, but then also who is your ideal roofing client? Like the themes that you see over and over again, like what are the problems that you see? Like, hey, what's not a good fit? What's a good fit? If someone's listening to this, like, who would you describe after those, you know, hundreds and hundreds and thousands of clients in the roofing space? Who do you see be successful when they choose KickCharge?
Well, I would say a lot of those clients are just not complacent. And so they recognize that whatever they've used up until a certain point has got them to that point. And that's great. But where they want to go and where they want to grow the company, they recognize that they can't get there with using what they currently have, right? So the idea that nothing we do today is considered to be good enough for tomorrow, and recognizing that the brand itself maybe worked fine when they just started, you know, maybe it was just them and a couple of helpers, but does the brand today represent who the company has evolved into? And the level of quality that they provide. And I think that that's the distinction too. When you think about brand, and I talk a lot about brand promise, and brand promise is really the notion that if I were to judge your company strictly on the visuals that I'm presented with, what is my takeaway? Do I think that you're a premium home service provider, or do I think this guy's going to be cheap and you know, maybe he'll do a good job, maybe he won't, you know, and roofing. You know, I think a lot of contractors in general, when you think about the key demographic you're trying to target, which is primarily women, they already have a negative impression on home service contractors. And roofing is probably even worse than plumbers or electricians or HVAC technicians. And so what are we doing to present and personify the expertise that we bring to the table? What are we doing to justify a higher average ticket, which is the other piece of it too. So like, if you're trying to think about how do I grow the business and how do I get paid more for my work? Well, a lot of times you can't get paid more for your work because you haven't given the consumer a reason to assign a specific value to your company. And those values are sometimes initially infused by the brand messaging that she's receiving from your trucks, your uniforms, your web, you know, your social media presence. All those things are basically creating an impression. So what we ultimately are really trying to do is we're trying to control basically what Mrs. Jones thinks about your company before you get to ring the doorbell. So if I can have her believe that you are a premium home service provider, it's going to be a lot easier to overcome price objections because she already feels that, hey, you know what? He is the most expensive, but you know what? If the roof starts leaking in 2 years, they're not going to be out of business, you know? And I could go with the cheaper guy, but who knows? Like, you know, they show up in a, you know, piece of crap truck and it's, you know, a magnetic sign on it, or it's, you know, not very attractive, you know? So those are all aspects that ultimately the brand is meant to really address and have them believe it. So, you know, a lot of our clients, you know, again, maybe they sort of plateau at their growth, or their growth isn't as accelerated as they might like it to be. And they basically have trouble distinguishing what their brand looks like in comparison to so many other brands. So, you know, we have clients, you know, just with naming challenges, like the actual name of the company is a problem. And how do we overcome that? Well, you know, a lot of companies come to us to rename them. Like we'll rename probably 50 home service companies this year. And while that sounds like that would be a really traumatic thing, you know, depending on your revenue, if you know, we've done up to $15, $20 million in revenue with a name change. We've yet to experience a net decrease in revenue subsequent to a renaming. It has to be done in a very organized fashion. But if you're a $2 million guy and you have poor naming, you have to really take a hard look at whether or not it makes sense to rename. In a lot of instances, it makes a lot of sense to rename because you'll gain traction so much faster with a better name. So maybe it's a last name brand. Maybe it's a brand name that is generic. Maybe it's a brand name that's difficult to spell. Maybe it's a brand name that uses initials. Those are all like hallmarks of things that are challenging to become sticky in the consumer's mind. And the more sticky you can become in their mind, then again, you think about Google and how much money you need to spend on Google to show up when they search roofing and your town name or roofing near me, like any of those search terms. Wouldn't it be better if they just searched your name? Like you're going to show up, right? Because it's a branded search term. So the idea of creating names that are more sticky, that are memorable, that those impressions that she sees when she sees the van, when she sees the sight sign in front of her neighbor's house, all those things play such an important role in, you know, again, needing to spend less on some of those other channels. You know, I'd rather my clients spend or need to spend so much less on just even SEO efforts, because if I can have their name become top of mind, I don't need to spend as much money on GMB and PPC and all those other avenues.
I feel personally attacked. I feel personally attacked, Dan.
You wouldn't be the first. That's all right.
I have a name. It's hard to say. I can barely even say it. And it's so, totally true. I think we need to have a phone conversation after this.
Yeah, well, we're gonna take a few minutes here to rip John's whole branding situation here.
I've known it's bad for like 5 years, so it's not like a surprise. We've done well, but like everything you're saying, I totally know is true. It's like, yeah. How do you say that? And yeah,
Dan, right. You mentioned something where you're just talking about Mrs. Jones and the woman and of the household and so forth. I think as any marketing always starts with identifying your ideal customer and who you're speaking mm-hmm. to. And I think this is one of the problems that when these guys are starting off companies, they're talking to their buddies and
yeah, you know, extreme roofing.
Exactly.
Extreme, you know? And it's got like a you know, lightning bolt on the side of the truck. Like that's not gonna work, man.
Yeah.
How important is that? I mean, isn't that something that, you know, you've got to start with something that's not offensive to the customer you're trying to market to?
Yeah, absolutely. And you do see that mistake as far as developing brands that the owners themselves personally like. And while I certainly understand that it's important for an owner to like their own brand. I mean, it would be kind of silly to try to say, well, you know, it doesn't matter if you like your brand or you don't like your brand. But at the end of the day, who really matters most is who you're selling to. I guarantee you, if your ideal customer loves your brand, you're going to start loving it yourself too, yeah. Once you see the results. Yeah. So a lot of people get caught up in that. Oh, like I want to have it reflect me and my personality, or I want it to be macho or tough. And you'll see a lot of, you know, brands that even sometimes use mascots, and the mascot is like super aggressive in nature. Maybe they're running towards you holding a tool and they got rippling muscles. And again, now you're thinking Mrs. Jones, she's already scared shitless about who's coming to the house. why are we leading in with something that feels super aggressive to her and again puts her on the defensive before you even get there? Like a warm teddy bear type of brand is going to make her feel very different than the muscled superhero holding a wrench that looks like he's about to, you know, commit bodily harm to you, you know? So it's, which all this sounds like totally painfully obvious, but there's so much of it that continues to go on where the mascot is really built for, you know, again, maybe what the owner likes, his buddy likes, if it's a male, you know, things like that. So you tend to want to make sure that they best understand that at the end of the day, women are making a lot of those decisions, making a lot of the initial phone calls, doing a lot of the initial legwork and research, things like that. And so you want to address her specifically, whether it's in the name and certainly in the image that you personify. So keeping her in mind is definitely a critical part of what we try to do as we're developing brands.
So Warm Teddy Bear Roofing is a good name. That's a good one. I think I should change it.
Well, an image that maybe uses a warm teddy bear, you know, like there's a brand we did for a company called Comfy Bear. And, nice, you know, nice. You know, and it's super, you know, warm and cuddly, like, you know, like they don't look like people that are coming to your house and are about to rip you off, basically. Right. So That's all, again, just part of that, you know, impression that the brand leaves that we're trying to control. So, again, making sure that she feels something or expects something before you get to ring the doorbell. And that's, to me, one of the most critical aspects. Even colors is another part, too. We didn't talk about colors, but, you know, a lot of roofing companies use the same colors that everyone else uses, you know, and trying to think about how you can own your specific brand colors in your market. It's one of the reasons why when we do an HVAC brand, I don't want to do red, white, and blue, because it's so difficult to own those colors uniquely. You know, not only is it associated with heating and air companies, it's also associated with Americana. So why would I think that as a company, I can own red, white, and blue? Now, have we branded red, white, and blue companies? Yeah, hundreds of them, you know, but if we were starting today and they didn't have maybe equity in those colors and looking at whether or not it made sense to keep it, that would be something that we probably wouldn't want to do. Like, I'd rather you be apple green and purple. You know why? Because like no one else has got apple green and purple. We just branded a company called Munn's Roofing out of Philadelphia. And that's actually what we went with. It was apple green and purple. We did billboards and like it looks nothing like any other roofing company brand in the Philadelphia market. So we're going to own apple green and purple in that market. Every time you see the truck, every time you see the site sign, every time you see the billboard or you hit the website, you're only really thinking about their brand because I'm not associating those colors with anything else. Maybe you might associate it with FedEx now that I'm thinking about it, but even FedEx is a little bit different, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned differentiation a number of times and how you're able to position yourself, which is all about how you're going to be able to charge more money than your competitor. And I think you're saying don't put on, you know, hey, we'll match any prices or, you know, no job too small, too big, all of these kind of things that are not clear on not only who your, you know, target market is, but part of the branding on what it is that you're trying to say and what it sells and what your company stands for. And I think branding is certainly a lot more involved than picking a logo and saying, that's it. I think that's what so many contractors think branding is.
Yeah.
Is logo, period.
Correct. Yeah. And I think that's sort of the difference too. And, you know, some people will call us and they'll be like, you know, oh, it's that much for just a logo. And as soon as you say just a logo, that already signals to me that you don't understand what it is actually that the logo is meant to do. So it's foundational. You know, we look at the logo as kind of being the hub of a wheel. And that wheel is your marketing wheel. So if you don't get that hub right, that marketing wheel is not going to turn very efficiently. Okay. But you put a lot of effort into it and effort translates into money. Well, you can still turn that wheel, right? But the idea is to get that foundation correct. You know, you look at sort of the, and you probably hear it all the time, is people say, well, I can't get anyone to work for me, right? No one wants to work. I can't find any qualified people. And a lot of times we look at that And then you go and you look at, well, what are they going to be getting if they work for you? What are they going to be driving? What does a uniform look like? Does it even look like a company that I want to be associated with or that I want to work for? So you have to be very introspective and look inwardly and say, does this project what someone would aspire to be a part of and to be included in? So a lot of times that's, you know, that's hard to look introspective and to recognize, hey, you know what? It's probably, I don't really look like a great company that I would want to work for. Why would somebody else want to work for? So, you know, you mentioned earlier, Dave, before we got on, about Tommy Mello and what Tommy Mello's done. Like when you walk into Tommy's Mello shop in Philly, not Philadelphia and Phoenix, I've been there many times. I mean, you walk in that place and it's like, oh man, I really would love to be a part of this. Like I got a brand new van that's fully stocked. I got brand new, you know, equipment that they're giving me. I got brand new tools that they're giving me. They've got a 6-week training program that they're going to teach me the ropes. And so like, it's a much different mindset when you walk into a place like there versus some other places. And, you know, everything is branded. The walls are branded. Obviously the trucks are branded and it looks like a special place that you're going to be part of. Now, I mean, how many in the roofing industry can say the same thing, like about what they're personifying, what they're projecting. And so, you know, again, looking at it from their perspective, like not only does the brand need to speak outwardly to the consumer that you're selling to, but you also have your internal audiences of the people that work for you and the people that you're trying to attract and show them what kind of culture that you have and all those other aspects to it. So it's just really hard to do some of that if the foundation is really weak and poor, right? You know, so.
That's a great point. So what I'm hearing you say is you should use any name but John Delorier Roofing.
Yes.
So yes. At what point do you rebrand? And that's obviously got to be a huge thing. John, you mentioned that, and I'm just goofing on you, you know? How do you go about that? And when do you make that change? We've had a number of clients that we've changed their branding because it just has nothing to do, one, with roofing. It's just unclear what it is that you do. And say, you just got to change this. How do you know when you're ready to do that and what kind of difference it's going to make, why you would want to make that kind of investment? But I would certainly think at some point, if you're going to continue to grow a big business, you've got to make that choice sooner than later.
Yeah. Well, certainly the least expensive time to do it is right now, right? It just gets more and more expensive later on. And it's not just the cost of, you know, well, I got to rewrap some trucks and I've got to get new uniforms. I mean, you have the hard cost of redoing some of those assets, right? But then it's, again, the cost of missed opportunities. It's the cost of how much more we're spending in marketing. It's the cost of lower average tickets, you know, so it's more than just those aspects. So, I mean, a lot of times it's just, hey, you know, does the brand even represent who we are today? And it was good enough when we first started, but is it really who we've evolved in today? Do I look different in my own market in comparison to my competitors? Is there something unique and compelling about my brand that would cause someone to actually remember it? And don't, you know, I want to say too, don't get confused when people say, oh, I see your trucks all the time, right? That's like the crutch that you hear so many owners as justification as to why they can't change, right? Oh, people say they see my trucks all the time. Okay, so step one, you've maybe established that people see your trucks frequently. Step two is, well, what did the trucks say about the experience they might get if they hired you? And that's the piece that is often missing. Like you can make your trucks pink and everybody would say they see your trucks all over, right? But what does it say about the deliverable that they might expect is the other part of the missing component. So I think, you know, if you're really spending a lot on marketing and it's not working and you're not gaining traction, that's one way to look at it as well. If you haven't invested, you know, seriously in the brand, it's unlikely that it was ever done correctly. I mean, that's just, you know, and again, when you first start, like, listen, I get it. You're bootstrapping the whole thing and you're trying to get out there as fast as you can. And, you know, you don't have tens of thousands of dollars to invest in it. Like, I get it. But, you know, at a certain point, again, like, is it really going to take you to where you want to go? And does it represent the experience that you provide to that homeowner is ultimately the question you have to ask yourself.
So why do contractors come to you? Are they, as you said, there's not, you're not, you don't rebrand that many companies, but what are they looking for when they hire you?
What are they looking for when they hire us?
Yeah. When they're,
yeah, I mean, essentially
do this change that if they feel, that it's not working for them, or they don't like their logo, or they don't like their colors, or
All the above. You know, they recognize that maybe the vehicle isn't being utilized to its maximum potential, right? So the vehicle is such a critical part of the branding. It's the most recognized aspect of your brand, because it's in your community. Like, most people actually know the vehicle and how the vehicle looks before they know really what the logo actually looks like, because it's repetition to keep seeing it. So that's why I always, like, one other little tip I'll share is on your website, you should definitely have photography of your actual vehicle, because that's what she's going to remember. Oh yeah, I've seen their trucks. She might not really remember the actual logo, but she'll remember the visual, the actual truck. So if the truck itself is not being maximized, if there's poor legibility on it, if there's, again, colors that you can't own, the idea of realizing that, you know, all your marketing looks like the same as everyone else's. Like, I always sort of use the example, if you go on Google and you type in roofing company logos, and then you click the little image tab and you see all these logos come up. And if your logo is kind of in that mix or just like it, just with a different name, then again, why would somebody remember that? What is unique about that? Is there even a story behind your brand is the other aspect of it too. You know, so you think about the brand story that you're trying to communicate in terms of the deliverable. Does it match? So a lot of those, I mean, there's a lot of factors, but those are definitely some of them to take a look at.
Picked our logo, John. I mean, you know, that stupid thing with the roofs, like everybody's got, and then the roofer coach underneath. Hey, we talk about truck wraps. John, and you've done quite a few. Also, you've done billboards. What are your thoughts on this, and what are the problems that you see? Because you talk about that all the time with, you know, people seeing your truck, your trucks. You've got yard signs scattered everywhere all over town, billboards. What are your thoughts there on what's working for you?
I mean, I think Dan makes a lot of great points that we all pretty much know. It's just like the hurdle, the mental hurdle, the physical hurdle, the financial hurdle of changing a brand, not just a logo, not just the name, but like color palette, everything that goes along with the actual process of changing your brand. I think that's the biggest hurdle for most, specifically roofing contractors. So it's exhausting to think about. And do they see the value in doing it? But I mean, I have been a consumer of an HVAC company that's well branded. It's different than Red, White, and Blue. They have billboards that all their vehicles are wrapped the same. I knew I was going to buy from that company before they even showed up, because they're branded extremely well. I knew the job was going to get done well because they spent all that time, effort, energy, and money into branding themselves. So for me personally, I do foresee myself doing exactly what Dan's saying. Is like, hey, how about not having a name that's a family name that's super hard to say, that is, yeah, they may see our trucks a bunch, they may know who I am in one of my markets really well, but how much better is it to have something that's unique, because we all look the same? And Dave, you pointed it out at the very beginning, roofing contractors are the worst at branding themselves. They're just really not good. They don't care. Most of them, mm-hmm. I'm talking about like guys who are doing millions of dollars of sales and they're struggling. Like, why am I doing all this work? It's so hard. It's so expensive to spend marketing dollars just to get that lead. Their acquisition cost is so high per customer. It's because a guy I know drove up next to me in a parking lot the other day. Nothing on his truck. Nice truck, but nothing on his truck.
Right.
It wasn't a new truck. I'm like, what are you doing, man? Like, you don't even have a magnet on there. How do they, like, you're driving around and there's nothing on there, and you know, you're complaining about how you can't get any customers. I'm like, It's an easy one, man. You got to put something on your vehicle at least. My thing, if you're not willing to take all that energy, effort, time, and money into it, at least be consistent. Have your yard signs look the same. Have the call to action be the same. Have the everything be consistent so that at least you're not confusing the customers. This, they don't remember who you are as you walked away from their driveway. You have to at least be consistent so that they see the yard signs are the same as they look the same as your truck. They look the same as your business card. They look the same as your billboards. Your website looks the same. Like, at least be consistent. Like, that's another thing that I see is like, even when somebody puts some effort towards a brand, a little bit of effort, they're not consistent with how it appears to the consumer. And I think that's like baby steps. Just take that step first and like make sure your color palette's the same, make sure the logo is the same, make sure the lettering is the same. Like that's how I view it. At least do that.
And this magnetic signs, you know, this is in roofing, that's generally what you see on the trucks. I see very few wrapped trucks in our industry where it'd be very common in HVAC and plumbing. How important is that for a roofing contractor to have a good wrap?
It's huge. Super important. Again, the most visible, most visible aspect of their brand is what's visible on the truck wrap. So if you can do something that is disruptive, that delivers brand promise, has unique colors, memorable, that's really what we're trying to do. Again, because you have to remember too that truck wraps by themselves aren't necessarily calls to action. People get confused about what that medium really is supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. It's not a call to action. It's not like I see the truck and right away I'm like, oh my God, I need a new roof. Let me call these guys whose truck is there. Maybe that happens once in a while, but it's more, again, brand building. The same way that billboards are really brand building. Right. It's not meant to be a call to action specifically, like direct mail and PPC. Those are more calls to action specifically because you're basically searching at that very moment or you're being delivered something that has offer based things. But billboards, truck wraps are really brand building exercises. And again, it's just the idea to get sticky in the consumer's mind so that when they are ready for service, they have a name in mind, just like John just mentioned about the HVAC company. Probably over repetition over time of seeing this truck wrap, seeing this brand, maybe seeing a commercial on TV, maybe seeing a billboard, but he had a name in mind. And that's a really interesting thing too. And that means that whatever company he remembered, they did a decent job on it. Because the reality is that there's a stat that came out that's mentioned in my book that like 84% of every homeowner does not know the name of a contractor to use for home services, whether it's plumbing, heating, electric, roofing, landscaping. So imagine that. Imagine that 85% of the people that you're trying to sell to have no idea who you are. So how do we do something to basically work to overcome that? How do we get her to remember your name when she actually needs that service? So certainly remembering that aspect of it has to do with how much money you're going to need. So if they don't know your name, right? So then what are you going to do? Well, then you're going to use GMB, you're going to use PPC, and you're going to basically be spending so much money so that you show up when she searches. But wouldn't it be better, again, if she just searched your name? You know, like John probably didn't Google, you know, heating repair or air conditioning repair.
Like just their name. Their name is it's a family name, but it's easy to spell. Everyone knows how to spell this name.
Yeah.
It's the lettering was very clear on all of their marketing. So you Google that. I didn't have to Google like HVAC near me. I knew exactly what I was going to, the letters I was going to type in. I typed them in immediate and they did all their work on, you know, they're supposed to do is like somebody answer the phone, et cetera, et cetera. So like, very easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a longer term play, like you say.
It is PPC, 100%.
You're going to see, you know, immediate results. I think this is something over time. It builds that name out there. It's kind of like SEO. It's a long term play, but it's really one of the basics. I think you've really got to start there and build your business around that. Let me ask you. We're going to design our truck wrap billboard, maybe. What are the important things to say on there say, you know, we can't really get a call to action necessarily, mm-hmm. but, you know, do we have our phone number on there? Do we have a tagline? Do we have our URL? What's important? Because they're, you know, I assume they got to be able to read it or understand it when you're going 40 yeah. miles an hour down the highway.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, a huge issue that a lot of companies have is they try to put too much stuff on their truck wrap. They try to put too much stuff on billboards and things like that. So the least amount possible is what you should be aiming for. So obviously the logo, maybe an aspect of the logo might be treated, you know, in a more dominant fashion. So your repetition of that image, that brand that goes along with it, maybe a tagline, maybe a website address. But that's ultimately it. Like I'd say probably more than 75% of all the truck wraps redesigns don't even have a phone number anymore. It's not really the way people actually engage with you. You know, think about the last time you were in an outdoor setting and you literally typed in a phone number on your phone instead of relying on the Google search results or just Googling the name of the company and then hitting their website. Then you'll have the call now button and you may be calling from there. But have you literally typed in the actual numbers on a phone recently that you can recall? You're right. So, you know, thinking about it from that perspective, like when we did the rebrand for Munns, it was a last name brand, which I didn't love, but I thought, okay, well, what can I do with it? Well, how can I get maybe something to remember that name, right? So I came up with this tagline, consider it done with Munns, right? So the headline on the billboard is consider it done with, and then a huge Munns logo and their mascot. It's in the apple green and the purple, and it's really, really different. You know, it's really disruptive. Their trucks are now in that apple green and that purple. But to your point too, even talking about the truck wraps and the things to think about, like I literally had a client yesterday that said he had an 11x return already on his truck wraps after 1 year in terms of revenue specifically derived from the truck itself, meaning he had the benchmark of the year before with his old brand on his old trucks as far as how many actual calls and revenue were assigned to it versus a year later, and he had an 11x return. So, I mean, that's, again, he thought originally it wasn't bad. Like, you know, people say they saw it. And then afterwards, just, I'm sure everyone would love to 11X their marketing, you know, with just getting a better truck wrap. So it definitely, we see a lot of that type of stuff too, where, you know, even if it's executed poorly, the results subsequently, like really just pay for itself and it becomes a no-brainer. I will say this, like no one goes through the process and says at the end of the process or 6 months after the rebrand launches, oh, like we should have never done this. The refrain we hear from everyone is we should have done this so much sooner. Like, why didn't we do this quicker? Like, so no one ever feels like at the end it was a mistake. Now, rolling out a rebrand and takes work. There's a very systematic way in which you need to do it so you don't lose traction, so that the customers know who you are, so the customers understand why there was a change, right? So it's not just, hey, let's throw a bunch of new truck wraps on and not tell anybody why we did it or what it means to them. So you have to do it in a manner that's organized and that makes sense. But like I said, the biggest thing we hear is we should have done this a lot sooner. It would have been a lot less expensive long-term if we had just done this earlier on.
And wrapping up here, Dan, I've got your book. I read it. It's great. Branded, not blanded. And the other thing that I see is you've got a YouTube channel that really talks about the idea of branded, not blanded. You use examples, I think. Mm-hmm. Is that right? And tell us a little about the book and that, you know, and how they can kind of get a feel of that. And then I've got a couple of quick questions I just want to kind of shoot through.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the YouTube channel, I think, is great because I think at this point I have a half a dozen episodes of rebrands. So I basically show the old truck and what that looked like and then what the redesign looked like and how the redesign addresses the deficiencies that were present in the original design. And I think even if no matter who you go to or work with on your branding, like having an understanding of that is really, really important, right? So you could watch and you could see, oh my God, you know, yeah, I mean, this looks so much better, right? And we talk about what was wrong really originally versus the redesign. And you look at even like Tommy Mello, who, you know, we were speaking about, like Tommy Mello was $30 million in revenue when he came to me. Now, by all benchmarks, like he's killing it. So why does Tommy come to me and say, Dan, this isn't going to get me to where we want to go, right? He wasn't complacent with what he had. His truck wraps, his is one of the examples. You could look at his old truck wrap on YouTube and you could see how we redesigned it. And it was redesigned with women in mind, right? We changed the color schemes because they were black and red, very aggressive colors that aren't warm, don't exude that real craftsmanship type of feeling. And we changed it. So, you know, that YouTube channel, there's a lot of videos of me talking at different events I think would be helpful. And in the book, like no matter what, like not everyone can use KickCharge and that's fine. But like, read the book because it'll save you so much heartache, especially if you're about to start. Read the book first because the naming is probably the biggest chapter in the book. And it talks so much about how important that first step is, getting that right. So I think that's really why I wrote it, because I would get frustrated. I would see so many people either getting bad advice or just not knowing really what to do. And there isn't really a book like that exists, like, as far as like a book on branding home service companies. There isn't one. Like, so that's why I'm like, well, let me put like 15 years of what I learned into this book and hopefully it helps some people.
Yeah, the book's great. I got a lot out of it. And there's a few things that I just wanted to hit real quick. Let's talk about colors. What are colors that work and what are colors that don't work?
Again, remembering who we're selling to. So think about, are there colors that make her feel a certain way? Are they colors that you can own in your market? Do other companies use the same exact colors as my brand? Okay, that's a problem. Like, why would people remember my color scheme then if everyone else is using something similar? So, you know, red and black for roofing, you know, it's hard to own. You know, it's very common. It also, again, very difficult to have someone feel something positive about certain color schemes. So trying to think about, you know, colors in a way that, what colors are available in my market? So even as you're launching a new company, like when we create a brand for someone, we do competitive analysis of all the brands in the market to determine what the opportunities are. So I'm not going to put, like for Munns as an example, like I wasn't going to put another apple green and purple brand in the Philadelphia market if there was another apple green and purple brand there. It's like, you know, Horizon is like a big HVAC company in the Philadelphia market that owns Orange, basically. You know, all their trucks are orange. So I can't put another orange brand in that market and expect my client's brand to be remembered when there's such a large presence of that other color. So look at what's available in your market. Look at if you can own your colors and then just try to think about colors that feel like unique. Like I haven't seen that before. I haven't seen that a ton before. And that's certainly a way that you can own your own colors in your own market.
What about mascots? Good or bad or depends?
So
we came up with for one of our clients. I thought, you know, that's the Coons Roofing. I thought it was great. John, as John's idea, came up with the mascot, really jumps out. And I think it's pretty cool. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot of mascot branding. I will say this, the vast majority of mascot brands that people use are not actually well executed and work, you know, in their best interest. So whether they're clip art derived or just not, again, like we talked about, the overly aggressive mascots, or they're not actually designed to be effective for the outdoor medium, right? So maybe it looks okay on a business card, but it really does not function well on the side of a truck. And so the way in which we render mascots and develop them are, you know, from day one are designed to be effective from a distance. And again, just designed in a way to feel as memorable. Like there's a lot of really bad clip art mascots that people use. And again, just recognizing the fact that a clip art mascot, you can't own, you can't trademark, and you can't prevent someone else from using the same exact piece of art and the same exact mascot, even in your own market. So people don't understand that aspect as well, as far as having a logo like, you know, like you said, when you Google roofing logos and there's a whole slew of them with the rooftop and they all look very similar, you have no protection of your intellectual property then, because it's not your intellectual property if it's derived from clip art. So that means that, again, your competitor can use essentially the same piece of art in the market. So we like to look at mascots as far as doing something that feels really different, really unique. And, you know, we've done a lot of really cool and fun roofing mascots and roofing brands that aren't going to show up on a Google search like that. They're not going to look like you expect the roofing company to look like. And that's the other piece of it too. Like, I get it that you want to be obvious that we do roofing. You don't necessarily have to put a roof in your logo for people to get that you do roofing. So long as the rest of the composition of the logo communicates very clearly, you know, roofing and siding or, you know, something like that. You know, people aren't that dumb. Like, they can get it for the most part.
You know, you mentioned trademarking. Tell us a little about that. What should we be doing?
So if you have invested in branding and you've had someone develop something that's uniquely yours, meaning it's not clip art and it's not based on clip art, then you should protect that intellectual property to make sure that no one else in the country uses it. So unfortunately, because of who we are and so many people knowing our work, a lot of people make a very serious error when they steal a mascot that belongs to one of my clients. And then that client basically sends them a cease and desist and it gets ugly and they have to redo everything. So you always want to protect your intellectual property. If you have a unique name, like when we do naming for our clients, that's the first thing we trademark is the name. And then we'll trademark the actual artwork and the logo itself. And this protects them so that no one else can use that name, that logo, that mascot in any other market. It doesn't have to be in the same market. People misunderstand and think, oh, it's okay if I steal the logo from the guy in Florida because I'm out in California. It doesn't work that way. Proximity has nothing to do with trademark. It has to do with the idea that if the two brands lived in the same market, would the consumer be confused? You don't have to be in the same market, but that's the benchmark, is if they were in the same market. So people think, oh my God, they're nowhere near here. It's okay for me to steal the mascot. And it doesn't work that way. So, you know, again, I kind of hate to see it happen because it's a very, very expensive thing to have happen. When you get served a cease and desist and you've got a dozen trucks already wrapped with a logo that belongs to someone else, I mean, right. It sucks. But, yeah. You know, that's one of the dangers of, again, either not working with a professional from the beginning and not understanding really how trademark law works.
So, John, well, you work with a ton of other companies and so forth, roofing companies. What are some of the things that you like, perhaps, and what you've seen? And let's wrap us up.
I gotta be honest. I've been on Kick Charge's website looking at all the wraps. It's been pretty fun. but I will say, I mean, the same kind of themes that Dan's talking about. Like, it, you have to have a. You need to have an original idea, original name, something that actually stands out from your actual local market, color scheme that has to stand out. Like, these are all things that I feel like very few people do very well. You said you're going to do around 200 this year, Dan, probably.
Yeah.
That's not a lot. Like, that's not a lot. There's thousands and tens of thousands of home services companies, not just roofing, but we all, as small business owners, need to be more proactive. I mean, I have a story like many, many guys in the roofing space where, you know, my previous employer owed me a bunch of money, wasn't going to pay me, had to start a business to make money for my family. And so I didn't take the time, didn't have the money to actually do what I wanted to do, which is I knew I wanted to think about this when I started. I had like a 2-year plan of working for this company for a while. I was going to save up money and execute exactly what you're saying. That didn't work out. And that happens a lot. That happens a whole lot. So, I mean, I think it's important. I think it has hurt us because people are like, I don't know how to spell it. No one's going to spell Delaurier. I can barely spell it. So it's like they're not going to search for that online. So we're having to use other methods that cost money, like QR codes and like different URLs that are easy to remember. So they forward to our
board.
And that, you know, that's something that you can do and it does work, but then as far as SEO goes, it hurts you on the SEO side because you're forwarding URLs to your original URL. So Yeah, I mean, I just think that if you want to go from a level that you're at and you're tired of being stagnant, you really need to consider this. I think that we talk about marketing dollars a lot, and we don't really talk about branding in the correct way, like you were talking about it right now. Like, we just don't do it. We talk about, hey, here's a logo, and here's some colors. Maybe a name. It may change the name. But, like, really thinking about it, really taking the entire comprehensive approach of changing your brand so that it is the most effective for your market, for your ideal customer. We just need to focus on that more. We just don't do it. I don't do it enough. So, you know, this has been a very enlightening conversation for me. I've known about Kickcharge for a while, and I enjoyed getting to hear your perspective, Dan. And I hope other people listening, watching, also get that perspective and understand that how important it is to do this and how much it actually can change your business without just pumping money into Google, pumping money into whatever marketing platforms you're on to actually, you know, they not only did they see my vehicle, they remembered my vehicle and they took action because they consistently see how nice that brand is, how well thought the brand is. And then once they're reaching out, they know what to search for on Google. They know exactly what to do. Like, that's the biggest thing, biggest takeaway that I hear from myself is that I just want that. I focused so much on the online presence for so many years, but I've made it hard for myself because nobody can spell my name. So, like, it's very, very good points that you made to have caused me to create plans for myself.
You know, you brought up a great point, I thought, about having that truck on your website, because you're right. That's what's going to pull up to the house. That's what you see, you know, oh, there's that truck, and everything ties together and builds a professional looking company. So Dan, tell us how we can get the book, and also how do we get in touch with you to talk about, so I'm sure a number of our listeners got to be thinking, you know, I gotta really change this brand around. How do we get the book? How do we get in touch?
Sure. You can get the book on Amazon, or you can get it through our site at kickcharge.com/books. If you get it through our site, it's a little bit cheaper and it'll be autographed and it'll be worth hundreds down the road, I'm sure.
Exactly.
If you want to just reach out to us, you can certainly hit us up at kickcharge.com, or you could hit us up online on Facebook or any of the other channels, and happy to chat with you.
Great. And also check out this YouTube. I think it's great because it's really fun to see some of these before and afters. It really gives you a great feel of what you should be doing, what you can do, and how much difference it's going to make in your business. But Dan, hey, I really appreciate you coming on. I learned a ton. John, you know, that's some good stuff, huh?
Absolutely.
All right.
John's devastated.
I am. In a good way. I'm devastated in a good way.
I can see the wheels turning up there, going, what am I going to do here? Well, all right, Dan, appreciate it, man. We'll talk soon. All right. Well, that's it for the show today. John, he took quite a beating. He's going to be devastated. Hey, go check out his website and see what you guys think. It's at roofsavannah.com. He's got a great website. Tim Brown at Hook Agency just finished it up not too long ago, so you know it's great. But drop him a note, pat him on the back, and make him feel better. And also, if you want to join one of our mastermind groups, it's a peer group. We get together, you know, with 8 contractors, non-competing contractors from around the country. And we really get a lot accomplished, and it's a great group. Well, all these groups are great. So if you're interested in that, or interested in talking about one-on-one coaching with John and myself, go to our contact page on the website at theroofershow.com. Click the button, get to my calendar, set a time, and we can talk about it and go through the program. And if nothing else, we'll give you a few tips about your business that can help you take action and really make an impact on the rest of this year. We're coming into the second half, so we want to have a good plan, of attack and go out and get them. All right. We'll see you next week on the Roofer Show podcast.